What I learned in Sunday school, I'm writing an essay. I'll tell people about it on Thursday night, but it's about what we learned and didn't learn in Sunday school. But what I remember learning in Sunday school is that to be like Jesus was to be with people sometimes without saying very much, and to let the light shine through. And I convinced a client of mine, Meritech, in Chicago, to take the first 2 days of a 5-day leadership program and have those people go into the city of Chicago to various nonprofit service agencies and engage with people around the task, and to have them begin to understand what that part of leadership that we call having compassion is all about. And it's quite amazing, because rather than showing up, see, Habitat is kind of interesting because you kind of go and you build this thing, and but you don't have a connection necessarily.
You're supposed to. I mean, Habitat is supposed to be about the partners.
Yes, exactly. But in a lot of cases, they're enhanced.
Yeah.
In this particular case, some Catholic sisters, they have a halfway house for women who had lost their children due to drugs and going to prison, who were coming back from prison in a halfway and being reunited with their children. And so we had the job of having 5 Ameritech managers, 3 children and 3 mothers, work on teams together for the 2-day period. So you had all of this issue about who's gonna influence who. And some of these women who had literally gotten out of prison the day before or 2 days before. It was amazing both to track the feelings before they left on the 2-day adventure and the feelings that they had when they came back. And now they're in a situation now where they wanted to build this kind of linkage into most of what they do around leadership. Many people had enormous insights about themselves.
Could you tell us what Ameritech is?
I'm sorry. Ameritech is a phone company. They're in the telecommunications business. They were one of the Baby Bells, and they're located in Chicago, like U.S. West is in Minneapolis. So that's what you had. And those managers have to deal with the citizenship every day. Some people have never, ever been into the inner city of Chicago. Never. And it was amazing. Yes?
We have an organization in town that kind of does this bridge between, or gives people an opportunity to show compassion in an organized framework. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a national thing or if it's just a local thing, but our local organization, the actual name of the thing, has to do with conflict resolution and mediation.
Yes.
And
by the way, that is a national movement.
It is a national movement. Mm-hmm. She's the wife of an LDS pastor. And she spoke at an organization that I belong to. But basically what it is it's a triangular type of arrangement. And they started this thing along the small claims court, and which mainly were, you know, little problems, kind of like the tape, because the cassette thing, mm-hmm. you know. But we're here, two people to see the judge and to resolve their conflict. They had an option that they could either go to the judge or they could opt to meet with this conflict resolution person who had a lot of training. They had to go through, the volunteers had to go through the training, and they had a very definite procedure that they followed, what they could say and what the other person had to say. But the percentage of resolutions of conflicts that were resolved without ever seeing the judge, and the judge agreed that if they would, you know, come up with their own agreement on the thing, then he wouldn't get involved in it. And it's like 90% or something. It was an enormously high percentage. But I thought, you know, it really does sound like a neat way to get involved in something like that. And it had a structure to it, a format to it. It's being used in some of our schools.
Yep.
Kids get, you know, arguments with each other, and it can be a teacher or a counselor or anybody or another. And maybe they're even training other students then to act as the mediator.
One of the joys I had, often with corporate suits, people sue companies. You know what? Why people wanted the thing? You know what sort of ends half of them? It's getting us to apologize. If we apologize, most people drop the suits, unless it's real heinous, you know. But if it's, and I'm usually in the mediation position, and it's basically we ask the person what they want. It's rarely money. They may want severance, you know. But it's rarely anything that you would call unreasonable. But the thing that people really want is just be, I just like you to say I'm sorry. It's quite amazing. I want to move on to the second question, because I think this is the question, which is, what is the great work for our time?
The Great Commission is to spread God's word throughout the world.
And what does that mean in our time?
Missionaries, media.
I think it means peace between people. It means this kind of mediation type thing. It means that people get along.
In other words, the great work is to produce tools that allow us to be in peace with one another.
I think it maybe has something to do with breaking down walls that are between people in our society. I think a lot of that has to do with going to the other camp, whether it's living and working with homeless people, or whether it's working at building relationships in a community church between white and black. It seems like in this society, any kind of work that's acknowledging some sort of a spiritual base or motive for action feels so contrary to the prevailing paradigm. It stands out. It's like I think of Christ House in Washington, D.C., or the Open Door Community.
You might want to explain to them what Christ House is.
Christ House is a hospital for the homeless, one of the few ones, if not the only one, in the country in D.C., and they take people that are really sick on the street, and a lot of them are people that have just had an operation. And if you're homeless and in D.C. and you have an operation, they get you out of the door just as quick as they can. And a lot of times they're back on the street too soon and they get infected and they have to go back. So Christ House provides place for people to recuperate and to have other health needs of that. But when you use the idea of great work, you know, I think there's a lot of really important work, but to put that great title on, it's like something extraordinary. I think it's the people that are sacrificing in some way to go down. And maybe find out that it's not that bad going down.
I don't see it that way at all, because I think we can't all be Mother Teresa. You know, I see everybody has a great work in their own environment, wherever they find themselves.
Sometimes a great work could be just raising a decent... Excuse me.
I was just going to say, I agree with that. Except on an individual basis, you live your life as a Christian, and not necessarily going down, but reaching out to others. Respecting people as people, and living as Jesus would have you live. How Jesus would live, I know we'll never do it, but that's our goal. And understanding that and respecting that and getting out and working where you can in the homeless or the food banks, that's very important work. But so is saying hello to your neighbor, asking them really how they're doing, whether that neighbor is white or Hispanic, African American, but being there for them and honestly being there. You know, we can do lip service, but when you think of what you do for your best friend, can you do that for your neighbor?
And I think this is the sort of thing that I've been more and more aware how hard it is to be consistent on. It's interesting even if you watch her at Holden, and when anyone comes into this community that isn't quite the same as everybody else, that they tend to be a little isolated even within this community. You notice that when the Tapnish group came in, they spend a lot of time by themselves. And even in this community where we have time and space and, you know, all that, and the charge and all that, I think it is a great work. It's a real challenge. It really is for all of us, I think, as you say. It's always more comfortable to stay in our comfort zone.
I don't aspire to be Mother Teresa. But I try to be just a little bit like her, just a skosh. Maybe I'll call it Mother Teresa Light. But there are occasions where you have those moments. Yeah, people talk about eschatological moments. I love that word. where you have these moments where and you mentioned it. It's like I travel a lot, and sometimes these people that stand behind those counters who get barked at by businessmen. I've walked up to those counters there because I'm clearly number 15 and another guy in a suit with a briefcase, not being nice. And I've walked up and I've just said, you know, before we do this transaction, I just want you to know that you're valued and I know you're trying to do the best you can. And so if it takes you a couple more minutes to get what you need to do, why don't you do that? And I'll be here. One person said, you're bringing tears to my eyes. I said, well, I want you to know that I know that this is shitty, what you're having to do today. But you're a human being just like I do, and this is your job. And my job is to fly around. So do the best you can. And, you know, let's kind of go with it. And if I miss the flight, I guess I'll get home late. Is that feeding the hungry or nurturing the sick?
It's bringing in the kingdom too.
It's bringing in the kingdom.
Just in little ways.
In little tiny ways. Like stopping a child and saying, thank you. That was really good of you to do that. Or stopping a child and saying, is there some other option to wanting to choke your friend to death? Is there something else we could do here? So, let's get real specific about the great work in our time. I understand we need to do missionary work, but I want to hear what kind of missionary work.
I'm pretty good at shotgun blast.
That's okay. Well, see, that's what God's gift is for you. You put it out there. Now I want to pick up each little piece and get a little bit more deep around what that means. So help us out.
Well, one of the things everybody can do is to get the missionaries. They need the money.
And if you don't have the money, you might be able to give a blanket or send towels. Or one year I sent, I got some surplus medical band-aids, that kind of stuff. And put them in. When we were kids, some of the younger folks in the room. Remember the care packages we used to do in school? Mm-hmm. Like you brought a toothbrush and you, mm-hmm. That was a simple thing, but boy, it helped somebody. But what are some of the other ways in which we can, what is the great work in our time?
Just our contacts with other people. We don't do it as much as we could, but even just sitting on an airplane and starting a conversation of something that we seem to be interested in, and then somehow sharing your Christian faith and just trying to be there for the people. Like I said, we don't do it as much as we should, but to be there for some stranger or someone else.
I'd love to sit next to those people who are like, you know, their suit costs $900. They're in to die for jewels. Nails are done. And start this question. You see the yearning on some people's hearts, either because they don't have children or they would just love to be have a restful. But I've had more people say, what is it about your life that works? And I used to tell people, not a whole lot of parts of it work. What works is my faith. And some people have said things like, but you're not like those sort of Robert Shuler type people. No, not Robert Shuler. Who's the other guy? Out east in Virginia. Pat Roberts. And I'll just put this out. I think some of the great work for our time is to help people have a visceral experience of the humanity of what it means to be a Christian. That, I believe, is the great work of our time. That people have a visceral experience of what it means to be, to receive a gift from a Christian. And today, if I ask the question, what contributions are Christians making to American society? What do you believe would be the answer?
Prayer in the schools.
What'd you say?
Prayer in the schools.
Prayer in the schools.
Well, I'm afraid that's what most people think Christianity is about. It's a moral code.
Mm-hmm. Abortion,
yeah.
Anti.
I spoke to my daughter's priest. I have a child who's being raised Catholic, so I attend Mass usually Saturday night sometimes with her, and then we go to the Lutheran thing Sunday. But he railed on abortion for about 3 years, every Mass, until I couldn't take it no longer. I had to say something. I said, have you thought about maybe talking about your body as a temple of God? And having people begin to kind of come across it that way rather than lambasting abortion every time. Have you thought about that? Well, thank goodness the next Sunday or Saturday, his homily was on. He meant it that he had some people. More. I guess I wasn't the only one that has, you know, kind of had it. You know, it's like he took every Bible verse and turned it to how we should get out and march for the fetus. Whatever your politicalness around that, it was getting tired. He was leaping, making leaps, and I felt I wasn't getting fed. I was getting a political statement. But the next Sunday, I must have prayed on this because he did began a whole series on your body as a gift and your body as a temple. And he did it around a whole lot of other things. I think that made a difference. And so rather than coming to him, making him wrong, I came to him with more of a question about another way to do things. More on the great work for our time.
Beware. We live in we live relatively close to downtown Columbus, but it's a pretty messed up looking. And I saw one day this mother with a crying baby walking down the street, and I was off on a beach or something. And I just walked down there and I said, are you okay? That's all she needed. She had been walking for 2 or 3 miles already. She had about 5 to go. She had no money left. No, she was in trouble. I said, let's go where you need to go. And I took her, and she couldn't believe it. Somebody would stop and actually use it. So be aware of people that need just around you. You know, get involved. Yeah, get involved. I was really balled off for doing that by someone who knew I could have gotten into some real trouble because it was not in a good neighborhood. I never thought of that. You know, you just helped somebody with that. So.
He is aware of function.
I was just going to say, I agree with you entirely on we need to live our life as an example. And that's what strive to do. Unfortunately, when we make mistakes, it's the first thing people will see and point out. And it's very hard.
That's basically what I was going to touch on is one of the best things we can do is be a witness of Christian where we are at in the workplace and so on. But the only thing you can do if you make a mistake is try to be consistent.
Yes, Jan.
Not with the mistakes. No.
But making a mistake is probably the most important thing you do. Because when you make mistakes, when you confess, and you're free to confess, that's exactly what Christianity is. That's where it's at. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're this perfect person that they're following your life, they can't be like that. They're not going to come. But if you make mistakes, and you know you make mistakes, and they realize it's okay to make mistakes, then come to church and old clothes or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what you are witnessing. Not your good life, but how you handle the mistakes you make.
And being willing to talk about your mistakes as lessons. Yeah. I call them love's confessions. You know, those moments when we are at our worst. Mm-hmm. And when somehow the gift of Jesus comes out in its own sense, and it may be somebody, a look. I had one person touch me once and I just broke down. I was in church and I was sitting by myself and somebody at some point in the hymn just touched me on my shoulder. And I just let go of some stuff I really needed to let go of. There are both large, medium, and small places we can act out this notion of the great work. We've talked about it in terms of relationships. I want to come back to the great work in terms of citizenship.
I think one of the things we have to do is, as North American Christians, is to put our values and our ideas about how human beings ought to be treated above nationalism and above. That's a real hard number for us. I mean, that's part of the great work. That's part of the agenda, I think, for our time. Is if we're going to be a world community, we have to try to vote and act in a way that's not just part of the national agenda, or have to do with our own safety, our own quality of life. I don't think we do that at all.
We're also terribly intolerant. We need to be more tolerant of each other and the differences.
I'm intrigued by the notion of tolerance because it's both inside our country but also outside our country. The biggest lesson I learned about this is when you travel outside the country and what people say to you about America. What are some of the lessons you learned about what people experience of us from being outside the country?
My experience is that often you see American travelers and they're very egocentric. And they just, even though they're in another person's country, they expect things to be the way they want them. And don't, even often don't appreciate the culture, the language, whatever, and the people that are surrounding them. They want to take America to another country. And it's sort of, in some experiences, it's just there for their amusement. They don't respect the fact that these are people with a culture and a history and a humanity.
We had an interesting experience in the Republic of Central Africa of someone who, they had money that they wanted to give you. Could tell us during that event. A black person who lived in that village of Abba, I believe it was. He had money that they were going to buy a vehicle, buy a car or something. Do you remember the story? No. But anyway, they didn't trust it with the people, this money, with the people around them. I mean,
the story was about us. I'll start again. All right. We had a vehicle to sell.
Oh, okay.
And actually it was a Mohammedan, mm-hmm, who who came to me and said, I want to buy your vehicle. I said, I've already promised it to this fellow. Mm-hmm. He said, but he might not buy it though. Here, you keep this money. And it was $600 out there, that was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. He handed me the $600, he said, you keep the money in case he wants it. You keep it in your safe. I said, hey, man, I got to give you a paper for it. No, I don't have that, it doesn't matter. You're a missionary.
He trusted it.
We trust all the missionaries. That's the reputation we have here.
So that's different from, you know, you're an American and you're just in it for yourself.
Yes.
And they trusted, you know, that they wouldn't steal.
Mm-hmm. What I find is that people have a real clear notion of an American. It is very positive. But then when they meet you personally, but they are very often open to talking about their perception of Americans.
In general.
Or
from movies.
Or from movies. I think our movie industry really hurts our reputation because people just see it as reality. I want to spend a few minutes on this last question because we're going to come to a close here, which is what new vocations might we be called to given the great work in our time?
I met someone here who isn't working full-time anymore and has decided to earn less in a satisfying vocation job.
Sure.
And then take the rest of that time and volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And is very happy with the decision, I think. Mm-hmm.
So some combination of less work and more volunteer. Other kinds of vocations that we might be called to.
My son's doing, he's a pastor, but he resigned his pastorate to take up computer programming so that he can support himself and go out and start a new congregation.
Mm-hmm. Apostle Paul type ministry.
Mm-hmm.
He's just starting it, computer part of it. Hasn't gotten to the Apostle Paul part.
We'll give him a tent.
Oh, yeah.
Other examples of new vocations? I believe that your vocation will probably, you'll have multiple vocations, and that you may practice medicine. You could be an artist who is an emerging artist, and you could choose to be a world priest. In my life, that's the direction I'm going. At some point, I know I will be a pastor, but will be very different. I'm wanting to be a worker priest, but I'm going to be doing three or four other things because I wouldn't be happy if I wasn't.
One new direction for me has been to maybe acknowledge that if there are more than ones to reach, if it's harder to do the things that need to be done, you also need to nurture your own creativity and your own way of refilling.
Yes.
And so I quit a job 7.5 years ago and still I'm on a payoff right now and did volunteer work, was president for Habitat for Humanity. But part of my vocation right now has been to write for the last 3.5 years and discover more that I'm much more a solitary, needing to be refueled person than I ever realized I was. I was this high energy out there. You know, activists doing stuff. And so the path I'm still on is to try to maybe put a life together where I'm more constantly refueled so I don't burn out, and yet figure out where are the places I will continue to engage in the world and break down the roots and reach out. But to do a better job, because I spent maybe 20 years parent, activist, you know, all these high-energy good things, but then you maybe can't keep on doing it forever and survive. So now I build a new sort of life that maybe honors more the need to keep refueled and to keep
better in touch with where it is going.
Other ideas?
Go ahead.
I think it was in vocation and education. I'm involved in technology, and there's a big change coming as far as the teacher being more of a facilitator rather than as a, you know, the expert up in front of the class. And the location I have identified right now, I'm going to be doing, before this beginning to head in that direction, but working with computers to figure out a way that you can direct kids, you know, in some sort of direction, so that and working on connecting computers with the curriculum, which is a hard thing to do. But I see that as a coming type of vocation. I'm not sure just how this compassion and citizenship and all that quite works into it, except that I think that it's a new way of learning that maybe we'll be able to reach kids who have not succeeded in traditional education.
I could see right away a connection to compassion and citizenship. You could almost have mock government run on, like, particularly with the use of the computer and teachers as facilitators. There's some fun ways to do that. Other ideas for new vocations. I have one. How about new communities, new faith communities? People choosing to live together in different ways, other than the paradigm of a married couple in a house with kids. And not communal so much, but although that might be one way, but to live in some kind of community where you're drawn together either by faith or that you've reached a certain epoch in your life. I mentioned this to someone and said, you know, since I'm not married to somebody, I often think about, well, gee, I could live with that person or these kind of folks. And why don't we go buy some land together and we retire together as a community? And I think that more and more of that's going to happen because people will want alternatives to living alone and alternatives to living in nursing homes. And I think there will be jobs for people to serve as, to organize and facilitate those.
To reinventing the extended family that you lost over the last 100 years.
Exactly. And I do believe that that will begin to happen, particularly in the baby boom generation. I mean, I've had a number of people say to me, have you thought about how you want to retire? Or how do you want to do your life after about 65 or 60? And do you want to do that with some other people? And should we be thinking about that? And I've had some extended conversations, and I think there's something there.
You have some of that already in the territories.
Yeah, okay.
Especially down south.
Uh-huh.
You know, communities that, you know, they're really a family.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Also, where you do it intergenerational, where you have older people that can do certain roles, and then you have, you know, young children and parents that are single parents or whatever that need to work, but they can, the older people can take care of the kids. I mean, you can do all kinds of, where you serve the needs of lots of different people in the situation.
Exactly. And knowing that if I'm late from the office, that there's grandma so-and-so up the street the kids go to. Which is, but I believe that there will be a new vocation in rebuilding those kinds of communities. That they won't just happen out of circumstance.
You're reinventing the small town as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Within the larger town. Yes.
I like that, and I think that is where we're going. But without compassion, it won't work. Mm-hmm. Even Holden, you bring in, you know, the one element of faith, but you still have how many hundred different personalities? Mm-hmm. And I think Holden wouldn't work without compassion.
And that's a daily challenge. And on that note, I want to thank you for your time today.
Yes.
And wish you well on your journeys toward compassion and citizenship and the great work. Have a good afternoon, and then the tape can stop.